Democratic candidate Mary Burke is the first woman to win a major party nomination for governor in Wisconsin. She's on a ticket with a female attorney general candidate, Susan Happ. On the other side, Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish is seeking re-election herself. So many women running for higher office in the Badger State has got a lot of people talking about the role of gender in politics. We've got Georgia Durst-Lotti to expand that conversation with us now. She's a professor of political science at Beloit College. Georgia, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. Nice to be talking to you again.
Well, so we've got some analysts out there saying, hey, this is significant. This means something that we have two women on these two high-profile ballots on the Democratic side. Is this a big year? Does this mean something?
Oh, it absolutely means something. What it means becomes the question, right, Rob? So we really have three questions in why are Democratic women doing so well? Why Democrats, why women, and why Democratic women? So if we just look at Democrats, we can say there's a swing in American politics, and whether you mark it with Nixon or with Reagan, we have been swinging to the conservative side for many decades. Maybe this is the time to swing back, and there may be some evidence about that. Why women? Women have been known as the change agents. They're not like the norm. And so if you want to see change, then women have been, with the exception of Hillary Clinton in the primary in 2008, when an African-American man would have been a bigger change, have been the symbol of change, and voters kind of gravitate to them when they want change. And Democratic women are put in a particular place on the ideological spectrum, and the two or three places on the ideological spectrum. And it may be that given what the Republicans have been putting out in the state of Wisconsin and nationally, they represent something that's really quite different and distinct and a change alternative.
Are they, I mean, when we look at the candidates themselves, do you see that? That they're representing something particularly different, something different than the alternatives?
Well, there's, again, two questions there. Is Mary Burke different than the standard Democratic candidate and maybe even especially Democratic female candidate? Yeah, you know, she comes out of business. She has a very different background than anyone who's ever stepped up to the plate before, whose background has been almost exclusively inside government. And interestingly, Scott Walker has much more of an inside government, his entire career profile, than Mary Burke does. So, you know, just as a strategy, it was good for the Democrats to try to find somebody, and, you know, Mary Burke was this, you know, different candidate. Are they different than other women? We know, for example, that women prosecutors have done very well. They can prove that they're tough, but prove that they're tough on something that really matters to people, tough on crime, locking up dangerous people. Women especially like female prosecutors who lock up dangerous people. And there's a real clear record that comes with that kind of profile. And we can look at Janet Napolitano and Amy Klobuchar as examples of women who have made it into higher-level politics who are prosecutors. So in that sense, Susan Happ follows that track. Mary Burke presents really a more Republican profile than a Democratic profile. And since this race is going to be about the, I don't know, 8% undecideds, maybe that's different and important.
Well, taking a closer look at Mary Burke's campaign and Susan Happ's campaign, are they handling the issue of gender differently compared to one another?
Well, Pat Schneider, when she felt around the presidential campaign, when someone said, "You're running your campaign as a woman," said, "Like I have a choice." You know, I mean, like, seriously. Whether they say they're woman and emphasize women's issues doesn't really matter, because everyone knows they're a woman, sees them as a woman, makes assumptions that are so deeply embedded we don't even know we're making them. So both of them have to deal with that, and I think both of them have acknowledged that fact, which is different than some candidates, often moderate Republican women, who just say, oh, it doesn't matter at all that I'm a woman. You know, like to say, I'm a woman. It matters to you out there that I'm a woman. So I think they've both done that. Susan Happ certainly is playing the card of laws matter to women. What I prosecute, what I pursue matters. Things like gay marriage and whether I pursue this or not, because it's largely been so far ruled unconstitutional at the national level, and Van Hollen is pushing this forward, she's playing into much more of it matters that I'm a woman when it comes to choosing how to enforce or pursue laws with vigor or not pursue them with vigor. Mary Burke, and perhaps wisely, is playing into the people who vote their pocketbook. Governor Walker laid out his last campaign, and for that matter, in his reelection, on I'm a job creator. You know, are you a job creator? What are you? Are you a leech off the state because you're a public servant, or are you a job creator? And he set himself up as a job creator and then has fallen quite short. It's true that the economy of Wisconsin is coming back, but it's coming back at a little more than a fourth of the rate of the national economy in the last quarter. So she is wisely, I think, as a strategy, saying, I've actually been in business. I've actually worked with a company that makes jobs. I create jobs. I have created jobs. I've worked in commerce. I've worked in small business administration. I have spent my whole career about making jobs. And because people, more than anything else, vote their pocketbook, that's where she's positioning herself.
I want to back away from Wisconsin for a moment. This discussion happens after some Republican research was revealed on how women view the Republican and Democratic parties. I know you've been following that. What are we seeing from that?
I actually was amazed that Politico got a hold of this. It was the Crossroads GPS internal study that showed that women see Republicans as intolerant, lacking in compassion, and barely receptive to the policies of the Republican Party. Women also see them as stuck in the past, and it's worse in the Northeast and Midwest than other places in the country. So if you go back to why Democratic women, if you couple this finding with Democratic women are seen as a party of change, it makes more sense that somehow they seem to be getting a bump here in, you know, nice Midwest, nice Wisconsin, nice Minnesota, nice, you know, like the nice Midwest orientation towards the world maybe sees, and this has come up in some other places, Republican policies as mean. Now, I know the Republicans don't see it that way. They see it as, in enforcing self-reliance and giving the incentive to pull yourself up. But women are less likely to see it that way. Women are closer to being one paycheck away from disaster. More women benefit from increases in the minimum wage. I mean, there are all sorts of ways in which what the Republican conservative ideology is doing works against the actual economic interests of women. And then when you couple that with lacking in compassion, the Republicans have seen this as an opportunity, and, let's see what they can do with that opportunity.
We'll pick up that thought in just a bit. We're talking to political scientist Georgia Durst-Lottie now about how gender is playing into the upcoming elections here in Wisconsin. And we'd like to hear from you on this as well. Does gender play into how you vote? Do you think the gender of a candidate matters at the national level or here in Wisconsin? Why or why not? How do you see gender playing out in the elections for governor of Wisconsin, along with lieutenant governor and how about that attorney general spot as well? You can join the discussion at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And do you think that female candidates face bigger challenges than their male counterparts? If so, what are those challenges? Again, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also post at the Central Time Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now with political scientist Georgia Durst-Lottie about how gender is playing into upcoming elections here in Wisconsin. You can join in. How do you see gender playing a role in these elections? How does gender affect how you vote? Do you think men and women govern or legislate differently? Call 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll go to Joanne now in Milwaukee. Joanne, hi.
Hi, thanks for having the show. It's great. I'm a woman. I'm an educator. And what I have seen is that men really jump in and do things instead of thinking things through. And I'm very, very glad that there's some women out there doing things like Mary Burke. I'm tired of Governor Walker's policies because it's being rammed down our throat. And he's constantly saying the people want this, but there's a great deal of people who don't want this. And I don't think they're acknowledging that.
Joanne, thanks a lot for the call. Georgia, apart from the partisan side of her support of Mary Burke, she seemed to be suggesting, Joanne did, that men and women work differently when they're elected as legislators or in the executive branch. Is there any research on that? Do they really perform differently on the job?
Well, there are thousands of articles about this. And whatever has to be said about this is, on average, right, on average men do this, on average women do that, and the differences on average tend to be relatively small, but that is what everyone focuses on. So what I'm about to say, please put into this, when you know that you know women who are different than other women, you know men who are different than other men. So, especially when you look at something like power, on average, men see power as power over a budget, power over people, power over a policy area, and women, on average, see it as power to get something done, power to make a change that they think is important, power to be effective, and women's definition of power is much more aligned on average with effectiveness, whereas men's is more aligned with status, control, dominance.
And again, that's on average. Neither gender is lockstep on that.
Absolutely. And generational change is clearly evident.
And we've got a comment from Joe on Facebook who writes, gender bias hurts Burke, but my sense is this bias is more prevalent among conservatives who probably would vote for Walker anyway. And he writes, I have reverse gender bias. I think a woman's greater sensitivity and empathy for others would be valuable in a governor. Well, that takes us to kind of a flip side of the previous question, whether or not men and women hold these political offices differently. Does the public perceive them that much differently?
Well, I think he put his finger right on the crux of the matter for an election, and that is, are the people who have a gender bias towards women and the people who have a gender bias against women, you know, like, how are they going to vote anyway? And so those who are likely to vote for Scott Walker are far less likely to care that she's a woman or to see this kind of change potential, empathy, compassion, etc. Now, what will be really interesting is whether or not some some Republican women, maybe North Shore kinds of North Shore Milwaukee Republican women who are moderate. If there were liberal Republicans anymore, they might fall into that camp. Whether they see that what Mary Burke is offering is enough to switch over just for that election, just for that particular campaign. So, the people who care about this are not likely to vote. The conservatives who don't have this gender bias towards women are not likely to vote for her anyway, and the Democrats are likely to vote for her regardless. So it comes down to, as Mordecai Lee was talking about, who are that 8%, and can you, as a campaign, draw a few more leaning Republican, maybe women, into the camp to go out and vote?
Well, apart from the undecided voters, too, and Mordecai touched on this as well, the issue of turnout. Is it possible that having a Democratic woman on the ticket might help energize turnout in a midterm election?
Well, I believe Scott Walker even pointed to, and this is when I was mentioning the sort of cycles in American politics, Republican voter fatigue. If they're complacent, and Democrats surely had this problem at various points over the last three decades, right? Same old, same old. Okay, no big deal. We've got it. I don't have to worry about it. So, the answer is a lot of the polls differ on whether they're looking at likely voters or registered voters. Likely voters are breaking for Mary Burke. Registered voters are breaking for Scott Walker. Both of them are within the margin of error, so I probably shouldn't even be saying that. But, who comes out to vote will be very important. And as you suggested, Rob, I think Democrats have more incentive and more excitement about coming out to vote and to, be able to elect the first Democratic woman governor adds to that excitement.
Go back to our callers now. We've got Brian on the line in Wall River. Brian, hi.
Hey, how are you today?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
The financial end of it. Men have better financial support in the political realms than women do. And my case can be proven because the last time back in the 90s, or early turn of the century, when Bob Dole from Kansas was running for his incumbent seat against a woman, and he won his incumbent seat, he came on national television after winning and said the reason she lost is because she didn't have enough money. And I think that's where part of the problem lies, is that the men get more funding than the women do.
Gotcha, Brian. Is that generally true, Georgia?
Generally, it is true, but there are two important caveats. One, more spending does not necessarily equal a win. There is a point of diminishing return, and we probably will see it in the governor's race this time. Like candidates can continue throwing money at a race, and it will not change anybody else, especially when we're looking at 8%. The other thing I can say is Emily's list has been very, very effective in increasing the amount of money focused on a race and the various apparatus of the Democratic and Republican parties do something quite similar. Now, the question will be, can Mary Burke and the Democrats come anywhere close to matching the Republican wealth in something like Crossroads GPS or where the Koch brothers and other super wealthy people donate their money in a very targeted and focused way? Again, there's diminishing returns on that. I see from a press report that Mary Burke has bought 326 press slots, TV slots, and Walker's campaign had 427, if I'm recalling the right number. So, you know, he's bought some more TV time than she has. So we'll wait to see. I think it really comes down to the persuadables, and the persuadables aren't that many.
Take another call now from Randy in Sauk County. Randy, hi.
Hi, yeah. You might be interested. I'm really part of that 8% have leaned towards the governor, but let me tell you what I like about Mary Burke. She, when you look at how she's run her company, it's nothing but competent. She has innovative, green, electronic bicycles that are healthful. They're attractive to the youth. And if she does that kind of thing for Wisconsin, where she brings electric motorization to the forefront, things like that are on the forefront. As I look and see what she does, not what she says, what she puts in place, a man would be out there with his chest in the air saying, look what I have done. What she's doing is smart. She's letting the public discover what she's actually done. That is powerful to this 8%er, I can tell you.
Randy, thanks for the call. Interesting observation on about how a male from the corporate world against a female from the corporate world would present accomplishments. Do you buy that, Georgia?
Actually, there's been a lot of studies that show that men posture a whole lot more, and women are much more modest. In part, that's because gender roles are expected to be that way. I mean, men are rewarded for posturing and women for being modest. So it's interesting that Randy makes that, I think, very spot-on observation.
You know, it's still a lot more women are running for office, but it's still significant enough that we're talking about it here, for one thing. Is there anything being done to encourage more women to run for office? Maybe we'll get to a point where it's not worth worth stopping and talking about.
Oh, it would be my dream to have this not be worth stopping and talking about. It also would be part of my desire to have Republican women back in the mix again, able to speak with a much clearer voice than they have been for a while. When I was the head of the National Women's Political Caucus a long time ago, I lamented the fact that Republican women seemed to be pushed out because they were too moderate on average, and that the ones who came in, you know, marched lockstep. But that was part of the Republicans really bringing discipline to their party. It would be wonderful to be the place that we know that women can be political leaders, that they bring to the table their, as we would say in theory, embodied lived experience. That is, that because they live in a female body, they have experiences that men don't. Because men live in a male body, they have experiences women don't. The problem is not that we have too few women. Rather, it's that it is so imbalanced that when we get to a place where there's a balance again, we will have much better governance, much better policies. We can take advantage of everyone's experience in the world in a much better way when we do that.
We'll leave it there for now. Georgia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rob. It's a pleasure.
That's Georgia Durst-Lottie, professor of political science at Beloit College.